So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello?
Wait. How does that go? Yeah. At least you got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's ball.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
And, you know, every once in a while, I have a friend on Facebook. He's an old boyfriend of mine, like the first one I ever had in Phoenix, really. And, you know, we've been friends for, you know, 40 years or so. But we don't talk a lot. Occasionally, you know, we'll message each other or comment on each other's posts. But it's not like we hang out or anything. I mean, he's on the other side of town. He's got, you know, a partner, and he's, you know, we're just two completely different people. But he sent me a message yesterday, and I got to, let me bring this up here, because this came from out of the blue. All right, we hadn't been talking or anything, and then I get this message at work, right before I clocked in. He goes, "I don't know if I ever told you, but you were probably the first person ever to tie me up. Thank you for making that a comfortable and trusting experience." And I like, well, that came out of the blue, and I had forgotten about that particular incident, and so that's all I thought about at work all day yesterday. It's just
wow. Okay,
that was probably too much information for our audience.
Probably it's too much for me. I'll tell you that much.
But I just thought it just seemed so odd coming out of nowhere. It's like, what the fuck got into his mind where he decided he needed to tell me that?
Oh, well, okay, maybe he was about to get tied up by somebody else.
You know, that's and, quite possible.
And wasn't sure how it was going to go. So he's like, well.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's how the show is going to be today, apparently. That's how
Only go up from here, so, which is good news, right? It can only get better.
Well, it's hard to come down from the high of the show we had last week.
Yes.
That was Jennifer Plotsky was such a good guest.
Yes, that was a fun episode.
Yes. And as I mentioned to you in a comment on Messenger, I talked with Jeremiah Kipp. He actually messaged me to thank me for all the kind words that we said about him on the show.
Yeah, me too. I got a message from him as well.
And so I told him we're going to have him on the show before the Geechee Witch comes out next month.
Definitely.
And if we're lucky, we'll be able to get a screener of it so we can watch it before it comes on.
Yeah, it was funny how that episode turned into a commentary on Jeremiah Kipp.
Yeah, there was really only one real title for that show.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I hope everybody enjoyed listening to that as much as we did recording it, because it really was a lot of fun. We need to have her back.
Definitely. We will.
All right. All right. So we haven't had any celebrity deaths this week, have we?
We did. Well,
did we?
It was like 5 days ago. Yeah. Joyce Randolph. passed away. Trixie.
Oh, shit. I thought she died years ago.
Right, so did I. But yeah, she died just a few days ago as we record. 99 years old, which is a pretty darn good run.
Holy fuck. Yeah. Oh, and somebody else died. Glennis Johns. Yeah, she passed away. She was 100.
Yeah. Like, these people are living a long time.
You know, and I didn't see it, but I expected to see when Glennis Johns died. Well, she probably had the COVID shot. She died from the shot. You know, because you see that a lot, Rensselaer.
Oh, yeah, every time. Yeah, every time. You know? Yeah.
And I was expecting to see that, but maybe even at 99 or 100, you know, they know that that would be pushing it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no. Yeah, Glennis Johns, I always liked her, especially since she was the first person to sing my favorite song, which is Send in the Clowns.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, and she was in, had a great turn in Mary Poppins. And what else? I had forgotten about her. Wait, where the hell are you? Am I not spelling it right? Oh, yeah. No, yes, it's one N. Okay. Silly me!
I thought it was two N's.
Me too. How would I not have known that? Like, oh my God. Yeah, Mary Poppins, A Little Night Music, a lot of theater stuff. Yeah, she was cool.
Yes, she was. And, you know, she's still, you know, her version of Send in the Clowns is still my favorite.
Yes, it is up there for me as well.
Others may have sung it better, but nobody sung it quite like her.
Well, Sondheim had always said that he wrote that song with her in mind, you know? So it kind of makes sense, you know? I love her version. And believe it or not, Dame Judi Dench, I like her version as well.
Yes, I've seen her version on YouTube. Yeah. That's a excellent version. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Joyce Randolph is one of those. She did a few conventions some years ago. She was already in her early 90s. And I don't know whether I was there and just didn't bother or I couldn't make that particular show, but she's one of my regrets, you know, because I always enjoy the Honeymooners. My daughter makes fun of me. She's like, yeah, you like that old person shit. I'm like, you'll appreciate it someday, Olivia, when you really understand like why it was funny. And
well, and no, but she's of that generation that would be offended by it.
Probably.
You know, Ralph always threatened to send it to the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah. I've already seen complaints about that now and again on social media.
Yeah, I have too.
You know, do people realize Ralph Cramden was probably a serial abuser? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure he wasn't. Because if you really pay attention to the show, he really loved Alice.
Oh, absolutely.
He really did. Absolutely. He was just bombastic and was basically just a blowhard.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah,
he had anger management issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. a couple of pills would set him right, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I hear that about All in the Family, too, about how Archie was, you know, physically and, well, not physically,
emotionally
but
abusive. Because he called her dingbat. And
Yeah. And they forget there's one episode where Edith talks about the first time that he called her dingbat. It was when he invited her over for dinner for the first time. And it was Archie. He couldn't say like honey or sweetheart or anything like that because that's not how he was raised.
Right.
So he called her dingbat. And so it was always a term of affection in her mind.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But people just don't get that.
Well, and they don't care to. They just look at everything on the surface.
Yep.
You know, it's like why people still bitch, you know, why young people bitch about the song, Baby, It's Cold Outside, you know? It's like,
well, I always found that song very creepy.
Stop it.
Even as a kid, I found that song creepy.
You did not.
No, I did.
Not as a kid.
I absolutely did. You know, this woman wants to leave and this guy's trying to keep her there. What's not creepy about that?
Oh, what's not creepy about someone not want, you know, is having a good time and not wanting his date to leave?
No means no.
Never been there. Anyway, rest in peace, Glynis Johns and Joyce Randolph.
Yes, yes. All right, so we are going to talk about our favorite superhero movies this week.
We are.
This was an idea I had a few weeks ago, and I had thought about doing it last week, but we had our guests, so we're going to do it this week.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that we've never done this before. As much as we talk about superhero movies and comics and stuff on the show, the fact that we have never talked about our favorite superhero movie seems really, excuse me, kind of bizarre.
I agree. I totally agree. And I had to think about when you said, oh, we should do our favorite superhero movies. I'm like, didn't we do that? And yeah. Then I realized probably not.
Yeah, no, we haven't. And it wasn't even on that list that we never go to for ideas that you made a few years ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So why don't you start this one off?
So I will tell you what, this was difficult for me because there are a lot of superhero movies that I like, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of thought about them and then I said, let me narrow it down. Like, which ones are really my favorites? And then I said, well, a lot of these are kind of maybe going to be predictable or cliche, but okay, maybe they are. It just means that they're favorites for a lot of other people. So I tried to narrow it down to just five, but I couldn't. So I have more and I'll just narrow it down to five, like as we go. And we're going to put them in no particular order. So I am going to start with one that is not like a typical like superhero movie, like you might think of it, like capes and tights and stuff. And so my first one is Unbreakable by M. Night Shyamalan when he was still good. He was just off The Sixth Sense and he made Unbreakable. And I went to see it and I said, wow, I have never really seen a movie like this before where it's not a typical superhero, but the Bruce Willis character does have like a superpower. He can't be hurt. He has a weakness, which is water. And then the villain is like not a typical villain. You know, the reveal is really cool. And then when it shows along the way, the Samuel Jackson's Mr. Glass, you know, kind of reveals his plan and how it the movie actually had followed all of the comic book tropes the whole time. And you just didn't realize it, you know? And I was like, holy fucking shit. This movie really was cool. And I will fight anybody over this movie. What I find interesting and just like a little stupid is there was like a lot of revisionist history when M. Night started to have like some missteps, you know, with his movies. People went back and tried to, oh, well, The Sixth Sense wasn't really that good. Unbreakable really wasn't that good. I'm like, that's not fair. Like, you can't do that. Spielberg made some shitty movies along the way. Are you going to then turn around and say, well, now that I think about it, Jaws and E.T. kind of sucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. So that's my first one is Unbreakable.
All right. Well, I'm not an M. Night Shyamalan fan as, you know, we've talked about on the show.
Yep. I know you're not.
And I saw, what was the name of the first movie that Unbreakable was the sequel to? The original?
Unbreakable is the original. And okay. Then there was Split.
Right.
And then
right.
Glass. Right. Or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe Glass and then Split. I can't remember.
Yeah, I was thinking of Glass. Yeah. But I saw Unbreakable, and I just, it bored me to tears. Sorry, but it did. And a lot of my dislike for this movie could be due to the fact that I went to see it with two or three coworkers, and they weren't paying attention to the movie. They were just chit-chatting amongst themselves and texting. And this is when, you know, you had to do the T9 texting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, and they were just so fucking annoying. So I just couldn't get into the movie, and I just couldn't wait to get the fuck out of there and away from them. So that probably has a lot to do with my not liking the movie. But honestly, having seen other M. Night Shyamalan, Ring Along and Ding Dong movies since then, I have no interest in going back and rewatching it. So
that's too bad. Then again, the movie was probably a little too deep for you anyway.
Yeah. Well,
we'll just leave it there. Just because you didn't get it doesn't mean it's not a good movie.
Yes, it does. If a simpleton like me can't get it, then it's not a good movie.
Now, look, that's fair. The movie has its share of detractors. Look, again, we can debate it, you know. But I'm not going to waver. So
yeah. All right, so then let me talk about my first movie. It's a little bit of off the beaten path anymore, I suppose. But it's Darkman by Sam Raimi.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, I love that movie.
It was the first movie that he made after his Evil Dead stuff. And this was just so much fucking fun, this movie. It is really what every comic book movie ought to be. And it's funny because it's not even based on an actual comic book character. You know? And, you know, it's Sam Raimi at his best. I think, you know, Evil Dead franchise aside, it's probably the best movie that he's ever made. And it's just a ton of fun. The character of Darkman is awesome, and the special effects in it, you know, for the time were really, really good. There's just not a whole lot that I can say about it that isn't gushing, because it really is one of my very favorite all-time superhero movies.
I like it a lot too. I do. That's a good choice. So after I made my list, I just did some Google searches to look at other lists of like best superhero movies. And that one is on some of them. And then it made me think about how I think that was the first movie that made me think about what is a superhero movie.
Yeah.
You know, because normally if I were to say superhero movie, I guarantee it's to say that to any person, and the first thing they're going to think of is maybe Batman or Superman or Spider-Man or something. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Whereas Darkman is more like very much an anti-hero.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because he didn't set out like, oh, I'm going to be this crime fighter. He's a guy that got all fucked up and now is looking for revenge. So that scene where he's on the date and the at the carnival, and the guy tries to gyp him out of giving him the prize, and he just twists and breaks the guy's fingers and says, "Give me the fucking elephant." Still makes me cringe. That special effect of him twisting the fingers still makes me cringe. And I've watched a Serbian film.
Yeah.
So, man, that's a good choice. I hadn't actually thought of that. But
and for those who aren't familiar with it, Liam Neeson played Darkman.
Yeah.
And Francis McDormand was also in that as well.
Yeah, and the villain was Larry Drake.
Yes.
Right.
One of my favorite character actors. He played the mentally challenged character on, I think it was L.A. Law.
Yes, he did. Yep.
And he was so good in that role. I actually thought he was mentally challenged.
You know what? A lot of people did. And he even said that in an interview. Like, occasionally he would get asked, like, oh, do you have Down syndrome, or do you have another disability? Like, and he would just laugh at it, you know? He's like, yeah, I get it. I get why people ask me that, you know?
Yeah, I suppose there is such a thing as being too good of an actor.
Right? Right? All right. Good one. All right. Yeah. So my next one is also maybe a little bit off the beaten path in that it's an animated movie and an older one. And it's from 1993 and it's Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Okay.
So there are quite a few. There's like a surprising number of animated Batman movies, but this one is really good. So it's so Bruce Batman goes after a new enemy who's been murdering. You know, it's ironic because he's going after a guy who's been or a foe, I should say, who's been murdering crime bosses in Gotham City. So and then eventually Bruce Wayne has to go on the run because he gets mistaken for the new killer. And it's a really compelling story. Like it's surprisingly deep. And I like it because it focuses on the Dark Knight detective side of Batman's character.
Sure.
Instead of just being like 90 minutes of just nonstop action. Like that's one of the areas, like over the years, like the live action Batman movies, I felt didn't focus on enough. Like he's supposed to be the world's greatest detective, but no one ever talks about it in the movies. So that's not to say there's no action in this movie, but if you want to watch like a really good animated superhero movie, check out Batman Mask of the Phantasm. It's really good.
I will have to check that out because as a general rule, I tend to not watch the animated superhero movies. Not for any particular reason that I have anything against them. It's just, you know, I just don't. The only one that I did watch was when they made the Killing Joke into and I was somewhat disappointed by that.
Me too.
Yeah, it just could have been so much better. Because it's one of my favorite all-time Joker stories. So, well, anyway, I will have to unfuck that and watch Mask of the Phantasm Orgasm.
Yep.
So, all right, my next one is kind of an anti-hero type of superhero movie, and it's Watchmen.
Okay. Good one.
And I know a lot of people give it a lot of shit, but I really do enjoy it. I enjoy the theatrical cut, but I really love the extended cut or the director's cut that has all the animation in it. And it's like 3.5 or 4 hours or something like that. I absolutely loved the Watchmen comic when it came out. I remember Joe, my good friend Joe, Julie Departed Joe, who's a guest on the show several times. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to it. And I think it was like maybe around the third or fourth issue when it had come out. So I'm one of those people who was reading Watchmen, you know, monthly, you know, as it came out. And I absolutely fell in love with the characters. I loved the idea of it. Alan Moore, you know, rocketed up to, you know, one of my all-time favorite writers, and he still is. There's just so much going on in the comic. And, you know, yeah, is the movie different, the ending of the movie different from the comic? Of course it is. it has to be specifically at that time in movie making when CGI wasn't too much of a thing to create the ending that the comic had would have been just it would have been ridiculous, and it would have ruined the rest of the, you know, everything that came before that. But I love this movie. There's, and I'm not a Zack Snyder fan really anymore, but to me, this is the best movie that he ever made, and it's probably the best movie he'll ever make, because he's just gone down steadily since then.
I have a love-hate relationship with that movie. I saw it in IMAX when it came out, and I did enjoy it. I agree with you about the ending. Like, that, the ending has been talked about 1,000 times. Like, what happened? How come there's no squid monster? I'm like, okay, come on. Like, you know, I get why that choice was made. It's a lot of other parts of the movie, you know, like, I thought that the, you know, the sex scene with Silk Spectre and Night Owl was a little silly and ridiculous, and it really did not translate well from the comics. And there were some other silly things. But then there were, like, great set pieces. Like, you know, I loved Rorschach. He was probably my favorite. You know,
oh, absolutely.
You know, Jackie Earle Haley was fantastic, you know? So I would have to look up the exact quote, but as I recall, Christopher Nolan is a big fan of the movie, and he defended it, and he had always said if it had come out after the Avengers had come out, people would view it differently, because, like, the superhero team-up movie wasn't really a thing yet, you know? And unless, you know, if you were a casual moviegoer and not familiar with the comics, you might not get it.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's a valid point.
Yeah, and I'm in the middle of the road. Like, I like the movie, but I don't love it, you know? I think some characters were way underdeveloped, you know, but that's a good choice, though. Again, I was one that I didn't think of to put on the list, maybe because it's definitely not one of my favorites.
Yeah.
You know,
I think one of my favorite scenes was the funeral for the comedian, as yes, the playing Sounds of Silence in the background. It just gave me chills. And even thinking about it now, I'm getting some chills. And the opening credits, I thought, were absolutely fucking fantastic.
You know, I agree.
The montage. And that's what endeared me to it when I first saw it. And I get it. It's not everybody's cup of tea. But I enjoyed the darkness of it. It's certainly not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. You know, and because it's a Snack Snyder film.
Yeah.
Snack Snyder film. You know, there's about 37 different versions of it.
Right.
You know. So, you know, there's a version to bore everybody, I suppose.
And again, I think, like with M. Night Shyamalan, there's, like, the Zack Snyder effect with this, you know, where there are people who just don't like him as a filmmaker, so they look at everything through that lens, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
All right. And
who would have thought when we saw Jackie Earle Haley in The Bad News Bears that he would have grown up to be Rorschach?
Right? 100%. Yeah, 100%. All right. So, but again, I remind myself that when we do these lists, we're not listing what we think are the best superhero movies, but our favorite ones.
Yeah. So oh, absolutely.
If that's one of your favorites, that's cool. Yeah. So
my next one, you're just going to flip your lid over.
All right. So good thing it's my turn then.
Yes.
This one is definitely one of my favorites, and it's Logan. I was just so impressed with Hugh Jackman's performance as the aging Logan slash Wolverine. Patrick Stewart as Professor X, starting to suffer from dementia and losing control of his powers and the effect that that has on the world. And it really did justice to like the old man Logan comic book storyline. And for a superhero movie, it had like surprising like emotional heft and weight, you know? Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, okay, it's Wolverine and he's going to slice and dice. I mean, there is some of that. And when it happens, it's really cool, you know? But the main story, it's really just a drama of a world-weary hero just trying to live out his life. And then here comes this kid. And it's like, uh-oh, now what? I just love that movie. I must have watched it 5 or 6 times by now. And it really is just, in my mind, not just one of my favorites, but I think it really is one of the best superhero movies ever made.
All right. Well, that is one movie. Another movie I haven't seen. I know this is going to sound like heresy, but I've never been a big Wolverine fan. I've never been a big Wolverine movie fan or Wolverine comic fan. I don't know. His character just never really appealed to me. So I haven't seen. I saw the original Wolverine movie, but that's because I had to go. My brother-in-law and nephews wanted to go see it, and it was around Christmas time, I think. So we all had to go see it, including me. And, I mean, that was enjoyable enough. But I just, you know, and I like Hugh Jackman, but I just have never really had an interest in seeing it. Although, if I'm going to watch one, it's going to be that one. Because that everything that I've heard, it's Logan is far more adult than the other Wolverine.
Oh, it definitely is. It really is. It's a much more serious movie than any of the other Wolverine movies.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now just remember, these are our favorites. Doesn't necessarily mean they're good.
If you have to set me up to this degree, you're right. I'm probably about to go cross-eyed, but
it's the Flash.
Okay.
You know, I can't explain my affection for this movie. I can't, so I'm not even gonna try. You know, certain things click with you, and The Flash, for whatever reason, is just one of those movies. I love the character. Oh gosh! Now I can't even remember his name. The guy who plays the Flash,
Ezra.
As you Ezra know, Miller. Yeah. I think he does a fantastic job. I know you and I disagree vehemently about how annoying he and the clone of his are in the movie, or not a clone, but earlier self, his earlier self, I suppose, or other dimensional self are. But I didn't find them all that annoying. I just found them typical for 18 and 19-year-olds. And, you know, I fucking work with 18 and 19-year-olds now. And they're just as fucking annoying as he was in the movie. So it's really, you know, no big deal for me. Is it ridiculous? Is it good? You know, as I said, it's not necessarily a good movie, but I have a lot of affection for it. And as I said, I can't explain why. I just do.
Okay. I don't know, man. I try not to, like, debate people over things that are subjective. But it's, I don't know, man. I just think that it's an objectively bad movie. But like you said, that's if it's a bad movie, but you still like it, that's fine. But to put it on a list of favorites, oh wow, okay.
It absolutely is. Okay, you know, it's one of my favorites. I've watched it several times since it came out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't mention that on the show because I know your heart isn't very strong, so I don't want to be accused.
No, it's not. It's not. And, dude, I wanted to like it. I really did because, as you know, I'm a fan of some of, like, the second tier heroes, you know, like Doctor Strange and Flash and stuff, you know. And so I really, really wanted to like it. And I just left the theater just like, can I get a refund on this? Can you give me 2 hours of my life back? But okay. All right. I guess I gotta let it slide. But it's not going unnoticed.
Well, you all like right. Unbreakable, so and to my mind,
listen, dude, you can't even compare the two movies. I mean, come on.
Yeah, one's enjoyable, and the other's just
like from a writing standpoint. You know, I mean, come on. I think AI wrote The Flash.
Oh, come on! What's not to like about trapping a falling baby in a microwave?
Good point, especially one that still works without electricity connected to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. It's pretty easy to trap CGI babies, though. So, the real ones squirm.
How do you know? Have you tried it?
Maybe I have. All right. So, my next one, man, I'm trying to narrow down my list. Because, like I said, I had more than five. But I know this one is like a hyper popular movie, but I don't care. It is one of my favorites, and it's Tim Burton's original 1989 Batman.
Oh, yeah, well, shit, that was my next one.
I knew we were gonna eventually duplicate something. At that time, like, I was still in college when it came out, and I had never really seen anything like it before. Other than the one that is my final favorite one, but just like a fully realized superhero, like a fully realized Gotham City, you know, Jack Nicholson as the Joker, all the hype leading up to it, you know, and the trailers and everything and the soundtrack, Prince and the soundtrack. I think I saw that movie at least 6 or 7 times in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and like, I would look forward to certain parts like the museum scene and all this stuff, you know, that we had just never seen anything like it before. And coupled with like just Tim Burton's visions and imagination, you know, he was a great choice I think, to direct that movie. And I clearly remember this, and of course there was no internet back then, it was just all word of mouth, but people mocking the choice of Michael Keaton as Batman. Oh my God, how can you put, he's a comic actor, he was in Mr. Mom and Johnny Dangerously, he's gonna suck. Well, how did that turn out? Yeah. You know? And now people say that he was their favorite Batman. I disagree. To me, he's my favorite Bruce Wayne. You can put anyone in the costume. You could put a stuntman in the costume, which they did. You know what I mean? It's like, you got to have a great Bruce Wayne. Just like I think, Robert Downey Jr. is a great Tony Stark. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Oh, there you are. Okay, I thought maybe you dropped again, or you just fell asleep during my diatribe. That is definitely still one of my all-time favorites. It's one of those movies that if I'm flipping channels around and Batman is on, I will almost always stop to finish it.
Yeah, I just watched it couple of months ago, for the first time in probably 15 or 20 years. And it still holds up. The art direction, the costumes, the sets, the direction, the acting. You could release that today and nobody would say anything about the effects. It was that good. And thank God he made that before he hooked his wagon to Johnny Depp.
Yes.
Because if he had made that once he started making movies with Johnny Depp, we would have seen Johnny Depp as the Joker.
Right? Right?
Yeah, and that would have been horrible. I love Jack Nicholson. I always have. He's one of my favorite actors. And he was just so good in this. And it looked like he was just having a fantastic time as the Joker as well.
Oh, he totally chewed up all the scenery.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And, you know, he had the best lines, you know, this town needs an enema.
Yeah.
You know, I still quote that 30, 40 years later.
Yeah. And not to mention, this is how smart he was. He knew what was going to happen. So he took a lower upfront salary for a percentage of the gross from the film and a percentage of the merchandising. And I forget the total. I mean, I could look it up while we talk, but he ended up making, it was some, I'm going to look it up right now. Jack Nicholson, Batman earnings. So, okay. Nicholson agreed to work for a $6 million salary, but ended up walking away with nearly $90 million by the time they were done. So there you go.
And think about that for a moment. From the time that it came out, that came out in the early 80s. And
89.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was earlier than that. But even still, 89. $6 million as a lower salary for 1989.
Well, yeah.
You know, that's just kind of incredible. But, I mean, he was at, you know, kind of the height of his
career. Yeah, absolutely. That was in fact, I remember, like, that was a coup when they got him, you know, to play a comic book villain, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was considered, like, a serious actor, you know. But people forget, like, the whole cast of that movie, Kim Basinger, Jack Palance, Billy Dee Williams, Michael Goff, like, that was a star-studded cast.
It was. It really was.
You know?
Yeah, and his follow-up, you know, with The Penguin, the second Batman movie, I mean, that was no slouch either.
No, not at all. In fact, I could have easily swapped that one out and put it on my list. You know what I mean? That was another one that I could have put on my list. So, oh, and just a little quick connection. So Robert Wool, who played the reporter, Alexander Knox, is from my hometown of Union, New Jersey.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Just had to throw that out there.
All right. Well, thankfully, I had.
Please don't say something stupid for your next movie.
No. No, you're saying Unbreakable was stupid enough for this show.
Oh, God. Okay.
My next one is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Like it. Okay.
Yeah, you know, it was the first Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland as Peter Parker / Spider-Man. And I was hoping for the best, but I was never really a fan of Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. At that point, I became a fan after this movie. But prior to that, I didn't particularly care for the character. And I knew he was in it, so I kind of, you know, had some mixed feelings about it. But Tom Holland was just so fucking good as Spider-Man / Peter Parker. And the writing in it was so good, and the pacing and the effects and the story. I just, it's my second favorite Spider-Man story of all time. My very favorite Spider-Man movie. But I'm going to talk about a Spider-Man thing once we're done, as a little throwaway aside. But he embodied Peter Parker. He finally got a character, you know, an actor who was closer to Peter Parker's age than any other actor we've seen before.
Yeah, and played Peter Parker like as an awkward teenager, which is what he was, you know, who happened to be very smart.
Yeah, and did a fantastic job. I really do enjoy that movie, and that's another one I watch fairly often.
Yeah, I like it too, and I always get a lot of grief because Tobey Maguire is like my third favorite Spider-Man. I thought Andrew Garfield is highly underrated as Peter Parker and Spider-Man. He was dealing with shit scripts. You know what I mean? I thought he was good. The movies were terrible, but I thought he was good. I liked him better, actually better than Tobey Maguire. People can fight me on that if they want. That's a good choice. That is a good movie. And I agree with you. I really liked Tom Holland as Peter Parker. I'm like, finally, someone who I really am buying as Peter Parker.
Yeah, because that doesn't happen.
Yeah, often. Tobey Maguire was like 30. You know,
yeah, like, just because he looked youngish doesn't mean he could.
I mean, you know, like, all right, come on. All right. So my number one, and this is legit, like I normally don't do them in order, but this is legit. And it's probably, again, a little predictable, and it might even be on your list, but 1978 Superman with Christopher Reeve.
Yep, that was my number one.
Right? I should have known. Dude, I still get chills when we see him in the costume taking off for the first time. Like, he goes to the fortress and he hears his father and they go, like, on the edge, you know, through the time travel or whatever. And then you finally see the grown-up Superman with the hair curl and the costume. And he takes flight. I still live for that shot. You know, in my living room is the original Superman poster that says, "You will believe a man can fly.
Yeah.
And it's signed by a bunch of the cast members. Another big regret of mine is never meeting Christopher Reeve, you know, and then he got hurt, you know, but I've met a whole bunch of the other cast, met Margot Kidder and Valerie Perrine and Ned Beatty, you know, Cliff East, like a whole bunch of them. I will never, ever not love that movie. And, you know, and Superman 2 as well, you know, Neil before Zod, you know, and the whole, even just the whole backstory is fascinating. Like how much money Marlon Brando made for 15 minutes of work, you know?
Yeah.
That was like a whole big story at the time. I mean, I was only 10, so that really didn't, you know, back then I didn't really know about that or care about that. But I just remember begging my dad to take me to see Superman, and he loved it every bit as I did. Because he grew up with the serials on TV and George Reeves and, you know, and what's astonishing is how Superman is just part of pop culture all over the world. You know, people who don't give a shit about comics or superhero movies, you say Superman and they picture it in their heads.
Yep.
And just so much other material. There's so many alternate stories, comic storylines and things. Just a great character. But yeah, that will always be my number one superhero movie. There are other great ones that I love, but that will always be my number one. And I'm sorry for co-opting your number one. I should have known, but in my defense, you have been known when we do these to go a little off reservation, you know? So, you know, it wasn't a lock that you were going to pick that one.
And I mean, it's safe to say that I did go a little off reservation on my picks this show.
You did. You did.
But I absolutely love Superman. I'm assuming that I saw it with my dad, because I know my mom wouldn't have had any interest in it. But I honestly, I don't remember the first time I saw it. Now, I distinctly remember seeing Superman 2 with my dad. But I can't remember when I saw Superman originally. But I know I fell in love with it. You certainly did believe a man could fly.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing Gene Hackman in a comedic role.
All right.
You know, that's just worth the price of admission right there.
Otisburg.
Yeah. And
Otisburg.
He was a fantastic Lex Luthor, surprisingly enough. But, you know, that's just one of those movies where lightning struck, you know, and all the stars aligned and everything, you know, came out perfectly. Same can't really be said for Superman 2. You know, that has a lot of backstory in its origins.
Well, yeah, I encourage people to watch the Donner Cut.
Yeah.
Because, that's what happens when studios interfere. It's not a bad movie, you know, the original theatrical release. And listen, when you start getting into Superman 3 and Superman 4, it's a freaking masterpiece compared to those.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Superman 3 had Richard Pryor and in it as the villain type. Although at the end, he became the unvillain, I suppose. Yeah.
He redeems himself.
Yeah. Superman is a classic. And I grew up on the George Reeves Superman, too. But I always thought, Superman shouldn't have love handles.
I know, right? You know what I always thought was funny? Like, you know, watching the reruns is when in the George Reeves show, the bad guy will have a gun and start shooting at Superman, and he just sticks his chest out to deflect the bullets, and then the guy will always throw the gun at him and he'll duck.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, hey, what? I mean, even as a kid, I would look at my dad and go, like, what? Like, isn't he Superman? Is a gun made out of kryptonite? Like, what?
Oh, that's true. I never thought about that.
Yeah, watch, right. They make fun of it, like on YouTube. There's like three or four times where that happens.
All right, so my last one, drawing from my reservoir, is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Good one. That was on my reserve list as well.
The first one.
Yes. Original.
And mainly because I knew nothing about the Guardians of the Galaxy in terms of the comics. I don't know that I'd actually ever really heard of them before. I read comics as a kid, and I collected comics, and but as I got older, I got away from it. And Guardians of the Galaxy was something that came out long past my interest in comics. But so seeing these new characters was really awesome. And, you know, James Gunn, you know, I love as a director. You know, his trauma stuff I always enjoyed. And he just did such a great job, and the comedy and the action and the effects and just the character of Starman.
Star-Lord.
Starman is the John Carpenter movie.
Yeah. You loved the movie so much, you didn't even know the character name.
Dude, I'm fucking old.
Okay? That's true. That's true. Fair enough.
Although, quick aside, I took an Uber home last night, and I'm talking with the driver because he was one of the chatty drivers.
Gotcha. Okay.
And he was talking about how, you know, he can't wait until his next birthday because then he can finally order off of the senior menu at Denny's. And I said, dude, I've been able to do that for 3 years now. And he looked back at me and he said, get the fuck out of here. And I'm like, yeah, I'm 58. I'll be 59 in August. He said, I didn't think you were more than 40. And I thought, well, he's getting a big tip.
Just the tip.
Just the tip.
Just the tip. Yeah, I was about to say, listeners, so Scott and the Uber driver are going out on a date tomorrow night.
And, you know, at first I was, well, he needs fucking glasses. But it was just funny how that came out.
That's great.
But you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, it was great. And the sequels, I really enjoyed the second one, particularly because of Kurt Russell. And the third one we've talked about, I have major issues with.
I'm both in therapy because of it.
Yeah. But that first one is everything that a Marvel movie should be.
And let's not forget about the soundtrack helped make that movie, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the few soundtracks where I downloaded it to my Spotify. You know, the whole soundtrack. Yeah. Where I can listen to every song and not have a problem, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
It's a great, great soundtrack. That's a good choice.
All right. So do you have a worst one?
I do, just real quick. Like, a couple of the other ones that were, like, in my reserve were Deadpool.
Yeah, that was
Spider-Man. As much as Tobey Maguire is not my favorite Spider-Man, I think Spider-Man 2 is a fantastic superhero movie. It's got a great blend of action and pathos, and Alfred Molina is great as Doc Ock. And it really does show Peter Parker's struggle of being Spider-Man. And then Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, both solid choices.
So, all right. So there are, I thought about like superhero movies that I don't like. And there's a lot of them. Like, there's a lot of bad superhero movies, you know? And then I'm like, how do I pick just one? So the one that I went with, like, for this episode was one that just really disappointed me. And that was Batman and Robin. And I thought, okay, you're going to have Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. Okay, that's pretty inspired. But Joel Schumacher, like, the choice in direction to go with campy and silly, like the TV show, was a bad choice. Like, the Val Kilmer, entry is not great, but it's not awful, you know? This one was just downright silly and goofy and stupid, you know? And I was like, oh, you ruined it. Like, you had the two Tim Burton ones that were good. Then you had one that was decent. And now you decided it was a good idea to make it campy like the TV show. Why did you do that? You know, and Joel Schumacher even came back and said later that was a bad choice, you know, and everything. So for me, that was just a big letdown more than anything, because I had loved all the Batman movies. You know, and I couldn't wait for the fourth one, and I left the theater just being mad. So, and then some other ones that are just bad, like Daredevil with Ben Affleck, Elektra, and a recent one. I don't know if you saw it, but Morbius was just god awful.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that.
Don't waste your time. Dude, I'll watch The Flash on repeat before I watch Morbius again. Let's put it that way. What about you? What did what's your choice for suckage?
Well, for suckage, it would have been Daredevil.
Okay.
Yeah. it's just a bad movie. And I really like Ben Affleck, but I don't think he was necessarily right for the part. But the writing was just awful, and it just really wasn't a good movie. And it wasn't even, unfortunately, one of those so bad it was fun movies. It was
exactly.
You know, it was just like an extended afternoon at the dentist's. You know, you just go in for a checkup, and the next thing you know, he's, you know, ass deep into your cavities. So
Yeah, no, that's I got you. That and again, I hear you. That's one of those movies, those one of those Ben Affleck movies where he was not the worst thing about the movie.
You know?
It was he had what he had to work with. So,
all right. Well, but real, here we go. Real quickly, I do want to mention. I alluded to it earlier. My favorite Spider-Man story. It's not a movie, and I've talked about this several times on the show. It's the Spider-Man rock comic. It was a children's album, I guess you would want to call it. But it was a Spider-Man story with music and songs. And Spider-Man, Peter Parker, was voiced by Rene Auberjonois.
Huh.
And came out in the very early 70s. You can find it on YouTube. They've got it on Amazon. You can get it for dirt cheap as an MP3. And I highly, highly recommend it because the story in this, while it's kind of an origin story, it's got Doctor Who. Doctor Who. No, that would have been really interesting.
That would have. Wow.
It's got Doctor Strange in it, and it's got the Kingpin in it. And Kingpin is my favorite Batman nemesis. And it's just a lot of fun. And the music is surprisingly good, too. You know, it sounds very 70s, you know, with that twangy bass guitar going. And some of the lyrics may not be appropriate for today's sensitive ears. Mm. But it was just a lot of fun. And I listened to it on my way to work probably once or twice a week.
Wow.
It's only about a half an hour or so. But I absolutely love it.
Huh, never heard of it.
Yep.
I'll have to check it out. Well, all right.
You have to have heard of it because I know I've talked about it on the show. You probably just don't remember that.
I just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. So. I'll send you the link for the YouTube video. I've got it bookmarked.
Okay.
So. Cool. All right. Well, so what have
here
you got
we go. There's up? Our superhero episode.
Yeah. That was super, man.
Oh,
I'll see myself out.
Yeah, please do.
In fact, that will be the title for the next show.
And I was just about to have lunch.
Let's see. All right, so what do you got going on?
So Return to the Theater of Terror is available for streaming on Amazon Prime and Vudu. And I think there are some other streaming options that will be coming up soon. So as soon as I know, I will update everybody. On my end, submissions are open for Grindhouse Nights Film Festival. You can find us on Film Freeway, Grindhouse Nights Film Fest. Our early bird runs to the middle of February. So our submission fees are pretty reasonable. So go ahead and submit your creepy little horror and exploitation films. We'd love to check them out. Scott is one of our judges again this year, and we're looking forward to see what's cooking in the indie horror community.
Yes, and we've already gotten some submissions.
Yes, I haven't watched any of them yet, but
well, no, neither have I.
But they are coming in, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and I am looking forward to being a judge again. It's been a lot of fun the last two times I've done it, and I expect that to continue this year as well. So,
cool. What about you, friend? What are you doing?
All right. Well, I'm about halfway through the second draft of The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow, and it's going a little bit slower because I'm realizing that I have a lot of contradictions in my story. It's not very coherent. So I'm having to go back and make things make sense. You know,
got it.
you know what I mean. I can't think of the word. Continuity.
Mm.
It has some continuity issues. But it's still going to be on track to be released by the end of winter, beginning of spring. And I'm looking forward to finally getting this out in the world.
Awesome. Like I said, I'm looking forward to not reading it.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you can pick up my other books at Amazon, and you can get the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold. And of course, you can get the audiobook versions at audible.com.
Which, real quick, before we sign off, all kidding aside, I myself struggle to find time to read physical media, but you owe it to yourself to listen to the audio versions of Scott's books. He hit the goddamn jackpot with the narrators. For each one. They each bring something awesome to the read. And it's great. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to these books on my trips back and forth to Virginia. So if you're into audiobooks, definitely give it a go.
All right. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.